This is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller here with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And if you need help bringing out the best in your pet's behavior, give us a call right now. Our number is 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Among the calls this hour, we'll have another topic to share, Patricia.
That's right. You know, winter is a good time to relax, cozy up by the fire if you have one, cup of cocoa. Mm-hmm. But it's also a great time to teach your dog a bunch of new tricks. So later on this hour, we're going to give you some ideas about how to keep your pet entertained during the cold winter weather.
Snowboarding, maybe?
Skiing. A little ski jumping.
Okay. And still ahead, we'll welcome a veterinarian to tell us how we can ensure a longer, stronger life for our kitties. We'll look forward to that a little bit later on in the show. But first, let's take some calls. Here's that number, 1-800-462-7413. And here's our first caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Mike from Port Washington.
Port Washington, Wisconsin. Mike, thank you very much for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a 15-year-old Australian cattle dog mix. She's a wonderful little girl, been very good in the training that I've done with her along with my girlfriend. However, within the last, say, 2 months or so, around the year mark, she has started to digress in her training. Normal things such as sit, stay, even getting into the garbage and things of that sort. She's just been doing them more and more often now, not so much listening mm-hmm. as she is doing what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we've changed anything within the training we've been doing. It just seems to baffle us. I'm not sure exactly what's going on.
Well, I actually am pretty sure, even though I've never even met your dog. Have you heard of the poem titled, When I Am Older, I Will Wear Purple? It's a poem about how older women basically get to do whatever they want just because they're old. You have a 15-year-old Aussie, so there are a couple things that could be going on. And one is hearing.
I mean, she's actually 15 months old.
I misunderstood. I completely misunderstood.
Yeah, she's just getting out of the puppy stage. She's 15 months, just over a year now.
Well, it is age-related, but not in the way I was going.
There's an answer for that, too, though, that 15-month-old.
Clearly, there's an age-related problem over here in my brain, Mike. But 15 months is not old, but you know what it is? It's adolescent. And that's actually, it's the age that a friend of mine calls the free to a good home in the country age. And it's very typical for lots of dogs, somewhere between 10 and maybe 20 months, to basically go, sit? I don't know. I'm not sure. What's in it
exactly
for me?
Like
and here's the trick. There's good news. The good news is that she will get through this stage. The bad news is that she can get through it one way or the other, and it depends on you.
Oh.
Well, if you, it's almost like raising a human adolescent in some ways, in that if you get sort of agitated and angry at her about it and get irritated, which I'm the first to say is, you know, understandable.
Normal.
She's going to take that energy and throw it back at you in all the wrong ways. What you want to do is basically go back to the basics as if she was a puppy. So when you say sit and she doesn't, I want you to make a little mental note. I have to remind her why it's to her advantage to sit when I say so. So I want you to get those treats out. I want you to go back to the kind of reinforcement you used to give her. That's one of the things that happens. They get older. When they're 10 months old or so, 6 months old, we say sit, and they sit almost every time. And like, wow, my dog's trained. And then at 15 months, they're like,
they regress.
I don't think so. They regress. And so you need to up the reinforcement. You need to stay patient. Basically, you just need to have this headset of, if I say sit, we're just not going to progress until you actually do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get angry, but I'm going to reinforce you and make you really, really happy you did. So.
Okay.
So basically, pretend she's a puppy again. Hang in there. This will be over in a while. And then 15 years from now or 14 years from now, you
come
can call
back
us. And then I'll have an answer to your next question.
Excellent.
Thanks,
There's one
Mike.
Other thing I wanted to ask about, too. Since she is such a high-energy dog and one of the dogs that needs a lot of exercise to really feel good and to be happy.
Absolutely.
Maybe getting her out more often, maybe that would help with it at all?
Oh, absolutely. Exercise, yeah. exercise, and mental exercise is just as important. And funny you should ask, because we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show.
We are. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-462-7413. And before we take another call, we have an email question for you, Patricia. Linda from Washington, D.C., wrote to us with a unique situation she's facing. And here's what she writes. My husband and I just finished building a log house in the country. Our daughter has a 3-year-old Beagle Border Collie mix that is an avid territory marker outdoors. I'm concerned that he'll try to mark our new hardwood floors. Do you have any suggestions on how to keep our daughter's dog from doing what comes naturally? Many thanks.
Oh, absolutely. And this is an easy one in one sense, in that basically you just need to treat this dog like a puppy. You're going to never give him an opportunity to have a, quote, accident. You're going to take him out lots and lots and lots and lots. I mean, every 10 minutes when you first get there. When you first get there, you're going to take him around the yard and you're going to reinforce him for going outside. If it's on cue, if you can say, hurry up, which is my favorite, because mm-hmm. that's how I usually feel, or go potty or whatever you want to say. If it's on cue, it's even easier. You're going to let him sniff around the yard. You're going to reinforce him for going outside. But here's one of the keys that a lot of people don't know is they'll get one response. Dog lifts his leg, urinates, and then they go in the house. Mm-mm. Not done
no.
yet. No. Well, we want more. Keep walking. Keep walking. For two reasons. One, especially males, but sometimes females too, they don't empty their bladders. They're just scent marking, or at least we think they are. We actually, as it turns out, Larry, if you look at the research, we don't actually know what they're doing. We've all assumed that they're scent marking. But we do know that they often don't empty their bladders. And so, or maybe they need to defecate, but they need to walk around a little bit more. So you also don't want them to learn that as soon as you go to the bathroom, the fun is over. You have to go in the house. So after that first urination, then keep walking a little bit. Get something else, reinforce that, then go in the house. Stay there for 15 minutes, go outside again, give the animal another chance. And then don't leave them there for hours where he has an opportunity.
Yeah.
Take advantage of the obvious times that your dog has to go. First thing in the morning, first out of the crate. Right outside, treats right after he does it. Just treat it like a puppy, and I think you'll be. Unless there's a big problem with the dog going to the bathroom in the house, otherwise, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's great advice. And if anyone else would like some advice, how would they do that?
Oh, I don't know. No, it's really easy. All you have to do is send us an email. Send us an email to pets@wpr.org. Or, you know, you could go to our website, callingallpets.org.
Yeah, and do it that way, too.
Yeah, you can email through that.
And if you'd like to call, here's that number, 1-800-462-7413. And here's another caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, my name's Heather from Boise, Idaho.
Thanks for calling, Heather. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a 2-year-old cat who, to me, seems recently been getting bored. She doesn't take enjoyment in any of her toys, and I've tried rotating them, and she plays for maybe a day, and she kind of gets bored with them. She doesn't enjoy watching all these birds and squirrels and clucking at them out the window like she used to, and I'm just kind of not sure what to do to mentally stimulate her. I've tried leaving the radio or the TV on, but she doesn't like that on, so she goes into a different room so it's quieter. And I'm just not sure to do to get her mentally stimulated like she used to be before.
Boy, I take her to the vet. Have you gone to a vet? I'm worried about her health.
Yeah.
She's very, very healthy. Yeah. She's it's happened since I moved. I recently got married, and we moved from a much bigger house into now a very, very teeny one.
Okay.
She doesn't have much room to run around or play.
It certainly is possible that there's nothing physically wrong with her, although I do want to parenthetically say that the best vet in the world can't necessarily, in a standard exam, tell you if your animal is completely and utterly fine.
Mm-hmm.
And every good veterinarian, every veterinarian I know will say, yep, that's true. It's just, you can go to the best doctor in the world and they say, you're fine, your x-rays are great. It's like, but I'm in terrible pain, right? So I don't want you to completely dismiss that, but I hear you loud, loud and loud and clear that this happened when you made this move.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a lot of sense that she's not adapting well to this new environment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of things you could do. You might want to try, just for the heck of it, I think I'd try Feel Away, that plug-in pheromone that can calm or soothe some animals. If she doesn't, if she's going away from noise, I'm worried about her feeling stressed and anxious, which is another cause of animals to sort of shut down. Mm-hmm. You know, so depression is one. Anxious, anxiety-related sort of shutdown behavior is another possibility. So you might want to try Feel Away. Let me ask you a really important question.
Mm-hmm.
What did she used to love? You mentioned she used to sort of play with the, you know, animals on videos. And what did she love before?
She loved just sitting by. My mother works in the home, and she loved just sitting by her in her office. And she would cluck at the birds and the squirrels outside the windows and just go to town.
And are there
away.
Birds? Are there birds in, for her to cluck at now?
Oh, tons.
But she doesn't.
But is your mother living there now?
Not in our, no. I was living with my parents, and then I moved and with,
so
you know, my
so
husband.
She had, so she had somebody with her all day.
She did.
Does she like other cats?
I do have another cat, and they seem to tolerate each other, but they're not always the best of buddies. They do play every so once in a while, but they don't snuggle up or anything like that.
And did you have that other cat at the other place that was much larger?
Yeah, they've been together since the beginning.
So now they have, the two kitties are in a more confined space, which could, I don't know, could that be an issue, Patricia?
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility, since they tolerate each other, you know, but don't necessarily get along. It's very possible that all your instincts are right and that your cat is basically grieving, you know, what she's lost. She's lost an environment and she lost an attachment. I would try, there's some sleeping places you can get for cats that are safely warmed. You have to be really careful, you know.
Yeah.
But a lot of cats seem to be really attracted to sort of warm, cozy areas. And if she used to cuddle up on mom's lap and by mom, that might be another possibility. Put the Feel Away right there. I would try constructing her a safe, cozy, really comforting place to be. I would also think about, I don't know how you feel about alternative medicine, but you might want to think about checking in with somebody who does Chinese medicine or acupuncture or chiropractic. Talk to your veterinarian to see if they have a recommendation, just to sort of check into that as a possibility.
And good luck.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Here's the number for you to call, 1-800-462-7413. And if you're feeling guilty because the frigid temperatures are keeping you and Fido from the dog park, well, coming up next, Patricia tells us how to keep our dogs busy and happy during these cold winter months. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers you the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and find out when Patricia will be in a city near you. Information online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are also available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell. And today we're going to find out how to keep our dogs busy and happy when the weather outside is frightful. Or maybe you're just living in a busy city, maybe five floors up, and it's hard to keep your dog busy.
Yeah, especially when you have dogs like a lot of us have that are working dogs. You know, you got a German Shepherd, you got a Jack Russell Terrier, Labrador Retriever, bred to work, right? So it can be hard to keep them occupied if you don't have a herd of cattle and, you know, down the hall in the elevator, you know. Or maybe your dog was injured. This happened to me, Larry, as you know, not long ago. My young Border Collie hurt his shoulder. No exercise for 2 months. Great. Six-month-old Border Collie. Don't let him move. No problem.
But you did do some things, and what are some ways we can keep our dogs occupied?
Well, you know, the trick is to focus on their mind, and that's what I did with Will, is focus on their mind as much as their body. And the good news is that, believe it or not, and it doesn't seem intuitive, but it's true, if you exercise their mind, it tires them out as much as physical exercise does. It really does. I just did this with Will last night. It was brutally cold here, and I'm teaching him a new trick, and he lay down and slept for an hour after 10 minutes of trick training. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
So, but, you know, this kind of exercise is often the kind of exercise that we sort of forget to do. You know, mm-hmm. we know we need to take them on walks, but we forget to exercise their minds. So here's the easiest mind exercise in the world. No training ability necessary. Teach your dog to sniff things on cue. It's the easiest thing in the world because they sniff everything you put in front of their nose. So you just you pick up objects around your house, move it towards their nose, and say, sniff, sniff. And I guarantee you they'll be, like, investigating it with their nose because that's what dogs do, right? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like this fun game. Dogs love it. You walk around your house and you just present them with one book and then another book and then a pen and then a paperclip. And they're like, well, this is really interesting. Why haven't you let me to explore your house?
And I bet you can make a fun hunting game out of it as well.
You can. You can send your dog on a hunt. You don't have to go in the field, you know, with an L.L. Bean jacket and, you know, and your hunting buddies. You can just teach him to go find. That's, you know, that's a great cue. Go find your this. Go find your that. And it's not that hard to do. Is show him his favorite toy, for example, and then put it close by, but just out of sight. Maybe you need to shut the door in between two doors. Maybe put him on a little sit stay. Just put it 3-4 feet away. But he has to go a little bit to get it. But he can get it. You know,
yeah,
he'll
he
win.
Get it.
You need
yeah.
to set him up to win, and then gradually put it further and further away. Say, go find your ball. Go find your ball. And once you get it far enough away, you can get, I don't know, like a Christmas present wrap. You know, you know, you can get a lot done while he's looking. And here's another one. This really gets their brains working. This is what I did with Willie last night, is teach your dog to discriminate between two different objects, to a word. So you basically okay. are putting words on an object. And have two toys that the dog really likes, and you're going to set them up to win. So every time you pick up, say, the ball, you're going to say, ball, it's the ball. Just you keep using that word, just like you do with a child, if you
sure.
think about it. Where's your ball? Where's your ball? And then you'll have another one, and be sure it has a very different name, like ring, ball, ring.
Okay.
Sounds very, very different. And play with that separately. Now, we'll put more details on the website, but basically, you're going to teach them to discriminate using words.
That is very cool. And you will put some more on the website.
Yes,
we'll do that. Okay. Well, you know, we've talked dogs here. What about our loyal cat owners out there?
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't mean to restrict this to dogs because you can train anything. Absolutely, you can train your cat without question. I've seen cats do amazing things. My cat does high fives mm-hmm. and sits, and lots of cats. You can train ferrets. You can train birds. I have seen goldfish do an agility course, basically, underwater. No kidding. So don't restrict your creativity to your dog. You can train your husband, Larry. You know, you can go crazy. You can train anything that can breathe.
Well, these are great ideas for keeping our dogs entertained. And if you want specific instructions on how to teach your dog to discriminate between objects, as we said, visit our website at callingallpets.org. We'd also love to hear about your pet's favorite indoor tricks. So while you're visiting our website, send us your stories and using our email form. Again, the website is callingallpets.org. And the phone number is 1-800-462-7413. Somebody's online. Let's go there. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi.
Hi, who are we speaking with?
Bippin.
Bippin, and where are you from?
I'm from Vero Beach.
Vero Beach, Florida, I'll bet.
Yes, sir.
And what can we do for you?
I have got a neighbor that has got two beautiful dogs. And most of the time, these dogs are basically chained up on their open porch. And I think these dogs need exercise. They need something, not just tied up. But those dogs are not allowed inside the house. And my assumption is that when they rented that property, they were told no dogs or no animals inside the house. That's basically the reason these dogs are basically getting tied up outside. And they constantly keep barking.
Mm. This is such a tough one.
It is a tough one. Also, we can't actually go and sit in our porch. Because the minute you walk in there, I'm sure they just need some cuddling or whatever.
Bless your heart that you're not blaming the dogs for this. You're absolutely right. This is a human behavior problem.
Exactly. It's not the dog's fault.
There are a couple things I would suggest, and it's a really good question, is one thing you can think about, and it completely depends on your relationship with your neighbors, is to approach them directly. Now, obviously, this needs to be done with a
lot of diplomacy. I understand.
Yes, diplomacy. I was going to say the best of social graces. It sounds like you understand completely where I'm going. perhaps, you know, some magnificent dessert that you and your family has created comes over, and basically, and it's not blaming, and I'm sure that's the tact you would take. You
right,
don't want
right.
to put people on defensive, and basically, I wouldn't even bring up the dogs the first time. I would
right.
come over and say, we're neighbors, you know, and you know, we sort of share the same space and the same air, and we just wanted to bring this over. And then maybe the second or third time, I'd say, you know, obviously you love dogs, or, you know, you wouldn't have them. I don't know if you know that your dogs bark a lot. We love dogs. We're not blaming them. So try and see if you can get through that way.
Okay.
That's always the best way. But
well,
most...
That's the way I would like to resolve the situation. I don't really want anybody to get into any kind of trouble.
Yeah.
I'd like to make life as plain and simple as possible.
Good for you. And I should mention for our listeners that most localities do have noise regulations, and barking is considered to be a disruption of that, so it can be reported.
Mm.
But again, that's a very different road, and I love that you want to take the friendly diplomacy.
Well, as friendly as possible. That's correct.
But let us know what happens.
Yeah, give
okay?
us call us back and let us know, or send us an email. Thank you for
okay.
calling.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. It's a tough one. 1-800-462-7413, the number for you to join in. Here's another caller. Hello, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, guys. How are you? This is Dave from Grand Prairie, Texas.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've got two cats that are both females. They're both exactly 2 years old. I rescued them from the SPCA, and judging from their birth records, they were born about a day apart. So they're basically exactly the same age. But over the last couple of years, they do not get along whatsoever. I got these cats hoping that they would cuddle and groom each other and play with each other and hang out together. And this is not happening, and they basically despise each other, and I'm concerned about it. And I wanted to provide them a good, happy home, but I'm afraid that they're not happy. And I've gotten suggestions to get rid of one of them or to get another cat. I'm not going to get rid of the cats at all. But I want to know if there's anything I can do to try to help ease this, or I'm not going to force a relationship on them, but I'd like them to be happier together.
This is a tricky one, and I really sympathize. What I can tell you from the research is that there are two primary factors that seem to be the most important when it comes to cats getting along, and one is time together. You know, when you
right.
introduce cats together, very often they don't get along. The average time of sort of getting things to work out is about 6 months. If it's not resolved after a year, then things don't look so good. The other factor that came out from Kim Berry's research is personality. And there's just not a lot we can do about that.
Right.
So the fact that people have brought up, would the best thing be to to find a good home for one of the cats, it's not an unreasonable thing to think about. It might be a very unsatisfying solution. Let me ask you, are you just crazed in love with both of them?
I do love them both very much. And they become, you know, just as with other pet owners, they understand that pets become an integral part of their lives.
They
I like to
do.
Come home and see both their little faces. And, you know, I like to, you know, I'm a true cat lover or a pet lover. But I don't feel like I want to give up one of them, but I'd like to find some sort of resolution. It's been suggested to me to get a male cat, that would help kind of level the playing field.
Well, you know, when you said that, I grimaced, but then on reflection, I have to tell you, I have seen circumstances in which another cat somehow seemed to balance things out.
Right.
Sometimes it can make it worse, however.
Yeah.
So that's something you need to know. There's disagreement about whether same sex is a problem. It's often more a problem in dogs than it is in cats. And
okay.
some of the research says it doesn't matter if you have two females and, you know, or two males. But, you know, especially two male cats sometimes don't get along, it seems, anecdotally. So you have two females. That could be a factor. Maybe, maybe not. Possibly bringing in another individual would modify things. You could try the aspirin of behaviorists, which is feel away. You could try that soothing pheromone that might be able to help. But here's a solution that I've had several clients take that manage the problem. Is
okay.
it basically is they divided the house into territories. Is
right.
it there was an upstairs cat and a downstairs cat, or an east cat and a west cat. Is that something you could do?
Yes. That would be... Basically, they've sort of worked that out with themselves,
uh-huh.
I think, to some extent. But they both share the same sleeping quarters that would be one room to themselves. but they don't get near each other. But I believe during the day when the family's not there that they do have separate territories to which they live in, basically.
I would try encouraging that. I mean, because basically what you have is animals who are highly territorial in nature.
Right.
So that's what I would try. I would try, that way you could maybe have your cake and eat it too, is try encouraging, watch where they spend time, and then think about how what you can do to encourage a complete separation, separate but equal, you know, and see if that helps things.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Good luck.
1-800-462-7413, the number to call. Do you ever wonder if the food you're feeding your cat is healthy? A veterinarian joins us next to share her thoughts on what it takes to raise a healthy cat on a healthy diet. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and you are listening to Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Calling All Pets website offers a variety of information, including online archives of the show, pet tips, Patricia's dog training books, and the opportunity to submit email questions. The website is callingallpets.org. Pet books and training guides are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444.
Welcome back to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and today we welcome Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins to the program. Elizabeth owns and runs a cats-only veterinary practice in Yorba Linda, California, and she's the author of the book Your Cat, Simple New Secrets to a Longer, Stronger Life, and she joins us today to talk about it. Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
You say that cats aren't small dogs, and yet they're treated like small dogs. What do you mean by that?
I mean that most of our views of how we should care for them come directly from our views in caring for our pet dogs. And that's a mistake because they are, in so many ways, both behaviorally and metabolically, extremely different from dogs and from people, for that matter.
What are some simple ways we can improve how we care for cats so they get the most out of their life?
In my opinion, as you know from the book, one of the biggest mistakes we're making right now is feeding cats predominantly foods, and this would be mostly dry cat foods, that are very heavily laden with processed carbohydrates. As an obligatory carnivore, and by that I mean the cat is it must eat meat to survive. It's in the top predator niche of the food chain, along with other animals we think of, the big cats, wolverines, piranhas, other animals that we consider strict meat eaters, and this is where the cat falls as well. What that means, as zookeepers found out long ago, is that these animals need a diet that's based on meat, balanced as though the pet cat in this case, were actually hunting for itself, and very, very low in carbohydrates and very low in processed carbohydrates in particular.
And so is the I get that the problem then that you have with kibble is that most of the dry kibble that is commercially available has a relatively high amount of carbohydrates in it. Is that right?
Yes, it all does. And that has nothing to do with what the animal's needs are. It has to do with the food technology of kibble. Kibble is cereal technology, the same stuff that we ate as children. Maybe we're still eating it. Certainly our kids are eating the Kellogg's, General Foods types of breakfast cereals that we see in the grocery store. This technology requires a tremendous amount of starch content in the product that's fed into the extruder to make the kibble, or fed into the extruder to make breakfast cereal. And as a result, the food technology is really driving the nutrition as opposed to the nutrition driving the kind of technology that's used to make the food.
So the subtitle is Cats Cannot Live on Cornflakes.
Correct. Exactly. They cannot, and they can't live on rice flakes or barley flakes or wheat flakes either.
So what do you recommend then?
Well, I guess I would I would recommend to listeners that they just sort of stop a moment, clear their mind of everything they think they know based on what they've heard and read in the popular press and advertising they've been exposed to, and ask themselves, if I'm feeding any kind of animal, what sorts of foods do I want to feed? And the first thing we all know from our own nutrition experience today, at least in modern times, is that the more fresh whole foods we eat, the better. Nutritionists tell us we eat way too much highly processed, overcooked fast foods, junk foods, snack foods. This is true of commercial foods. Even canned foods, which are far better for cats than dry kibble, are still processed. They're in a can. They're like something you and I might pull off of our pantry to cook for ourselves in a hurry for convenience. We all know that we're much better off if we at least strive to have meals throughout the week that are homemade, that are fresh and whole. And this is true for pets, and that would include dogs as well. A steady diet of commercial foods is like a steady diet of just prepackaged foods for human beings.
You recommend in your book a raw food diet.
I do. I think it's a gold standard. However, I want to throw in here before we go on raw that there are people for whom feeding a raw diet to their dog or their cat, and raw can be appropriate for dogs as well, is simply not going to happen, and there are a variety of reasons why that doesn't happen. When I have a client that says, I can't do raw, or my cat, 16-year-old cat that's never seen raw meat, that cat may not want to eat it simply because of habit. Canned foods certainly upgrade the diet of the kibble-fed cat enormously. So lest your listeners are sitting there saying, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't do that. I might as well not listen. They should understand that going to a good quality canned food is very helpful to their cat's health. But the gold standard is raw, and it has to be well-balanced. For the nutritionists that are listening, I want to say that I definitely advise my clients about balancing a good quality raw diet for their pets.
And let me ask you, I know raw food is a very controversial topic in veterinary medicine and in sort of the trainer world. Talk a little bit about that controversy and why some veterinarians in your field, for example, are against feeding raw. I'd love to hear your take on that.
Well, veterinarians, since I am one and have practiced for many years, I've been a veterinarian for 31 years, worked in the pet food industry, but also have practiced both on dogs and cats and now exclusively on cats, I can speak to it absolutely without any speculation. I believed what I believed about raw meat because that's what I was taught in vet school by the pet food companies, who were the only representatives of nutrition for small animals in vet school. And then that's all I heard in continuing education and in other educational information I got from the pet food companies, was that raw was going to be certain death for pets, that it was uniformly contaminated, that animals would be immediately stricken with food poisoning, that there would be all kinds of very dire consequences for the pet from being fed raw meat, which, of course, turns out not to be at all true. In the wild, animals, cats specifically, will often consume food that is not fresh caught. They will often consume animals that are sick, dying perhaps, which is why they've been able to be caught by the cat. And so we know that the cat has a tremendous tolerance for what we would consider to be contaminants in their diet. Having said that, I would hasten to say that those of us who feed raw, we don't go out and, you know, pick up roadkill for our cats. That's certainly not the ideal, and I wouldn't recommend it. However, a wild cat's going to go up to roadkill and have a meal. We might as well understand that.
And you do recommend canned pet food for cats if they can't get the raw. Let's take a look at the food label on a can. What should we be looking for a nutritious food for a cat?
First and foremost, if you're looking at canned foods for your cat, you should read labels always. You must. That's one of the obligations of the modern pet owners. If you're going to be, and we do that for ourselves, and we buy packaged foods for ourselves, we do it. So it's an automatic when we're buying human foods. Just make it automatic for yourself when you're buying food for either your dog or your cat. Look for foods that have the least amount of cereal products as ingredients. We don't want to be feeding cereal to cats, whether it's in canned form or dry form. And I would hasten to add that potato, carrots, tapioca, and fruits should be considered no-nos on a label as well. These are fillers. cats don't eat these things in the wild. They don't require them, and generally these kinds of ingredients bring too much carbohydrate and sugar into the diet. There are canned products out there that have a lot of this as filler, and I do recommend to my clients that they scrupulously read labels and avoid those kinds of ingredients in choosing a good quality canned food for their cat.
In recent years, you've seen an increase in cases of feline obesity and feline diabetes, and you have some nice examples of that in your book. Well, I don't know if nice is the proper word, but they're examples. What are the best ways to prevent the onset of these diseases and ensure that our cats have a long, healthy life?
The single most important cause of obesity, for sure, is the consumption of the wrong kind of diet. This is analogous to the situation with we human beings. We know we're eating incorrectly, and that is resulting in heavier and heavier population. And along with that, we have more diabetes, and we have more diabetes in young people. This is true among our cats, certainly. We have younger cats becoming obese and developing diabetes than we've ever seen before. I will say that many people say no, no. As a matter of fact, I recently was quoted in the Kansas City Star in an article about a week ago. And one of the counterpoints to my arguments was, no, it's all about our cats not getting enough exercise today. And that's analogous to we humans not getting enough exercise and becoming obese and developing diabetes. What I would say is this. What I've noticed through many years of developing my views on diabetes is, and obesity as well, is that once you get the animal on a diet with proper nutrients, every cat will become more active. That 20-pound couch potato cat will begin to take a much greater interest in its environment and will actually exercise itself. No, it doesn't go out in a jogging suit and run around the block. But the cat does become more active within the home, will play with other pets, is much more willing to play with toys once the diet has been changed. And so when one interprets my view to exclude exercise as a part of the management of a pet's health, that's incorrect. But I believe we have to be practical. Asking people to take a 20-pound cat outside and walk it for increased exercise while keeping the simple carbohydrate content of the diet the same is absurd, and it's a little like a very overweight human being going down to 24-hour fitness and trying to work out, meanwhile had Big Mac on the way and is going to have another Big Mac on the way out. That's insane, and we all know it won't work. As a matter of fact, it'll probably lead to a heart attack.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you all, and have a great day.
Appreciate you being with us. Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkins is the author of Your Cat, Simple New Secrets to a Longer, Stronger Life. She joined us from her home in Yorba Linda, California. Stay tuned. Our animal trivia question of the week is next with your chance to win a copy of Elizabeth's book. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, and this is Calling All Pets from Wisconsin Public Radio.
If you missed an episode of Calling All Pets, the show is available online. Our website offers archives of the show, along with the opportunity to submit email questions, browse pet tips, and learn more about a guest you heard on the program. More information available online at callingallpets.org. That's callingallpets.org.
You're listening to Calling All Pets. I'm Larry Mueller, along with Public Radio's favorite zoologist, Patricia McConnell, and it's time for our animal trivia question of the week. If you think you know the answer to this week's question, give us a call. Here's the number. It's 1-800-462-7413. All correct guessers will have their names pooled together, and three winners will be selected at random to win a copy of Your Cat by Elizabeth Hodgkins. And here's today's question. In addition to owning and running her own cats-only veterinary practice, Dr. Hodgkins is also a breeder of Aussie cats. Aussie cats are a rather new and still rare breed of cat that resemble wild cats but have the temperament of domestic cats. Interesting. Even though it may look like a wild cat, the Aussie cat is actually a combination of silver tabby, Siamese, and this other cat breed, believed to originate from Egypt. Which cat breed is this? I'm not sure. I'm going to have to look it up. And if you want to look it up and give us an answer to submit it, give us a call at 1-800-462-7413 and find out if you're correct by visiting callingallpets.org. We'll have the correct answer posted in about a week online. And Patricia, should we take some more calls?
I think it's time.
I think
so. I'm ready.
1-800-462-7413, the number to call. And here's our next caller. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi, this is Elise from Havana, Florida.
Elise, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a blue heeler mix. And when we got him 2 years ago, he was 8 weeks old, and he got stepped on by a horse.
Ouch.
Yeah, he broke all the bones in his foot.
Oh.
And ever since then, he has had an issue with horses. Usually once a day, we are boarding a friend's horse right now. Usually once a day, he will go out and start barking at the horse. Now, if the horse ignores him, then usually he'll get tired of it and go and lie down again. He has now dragged our other dog involved in this, ganging up on the horse. And if the horse gets spooked in any way, he will just go crazy. He will get extremely aggressive, jumping up behind the horse, barking, just growling, baring his teeth, and running straight into her. And at this point, if I try to yell for him to stop, he can't hear me. He's very focused on what he's doing.
Right.
So I was just wondering if you had any suggestions how to help him to get over his aggression.
Yeah, sure. I do. It's certainly understandable that he has this memory of horse as breaker of foot.
Yeah.
Horse as foot monster. But here's what I do. If I were you, the first thing I'd do is I would do some basically counter classical conditioning. It's really sort of operant, but you know, who cares what the label is? It might help a lot. Here's what I'd do. This is what it would look like. I would teach him the horse's name, literally. I would say, what is the horse's name?
Phoebe.
Oh,
yeah.
I love it. I'd say, where's Phoebe? And now you're not right up to the horse, right? You're a good distance away. You have some control over him.
Okay.
Maybe he's on a leash, ideal. If it's not, if he's on the other side of a fence or something, but if you need a long line, that's fine. Just use it as a safety net.
Okay.
And you're going to say, where's Phoebe? And if he looks at Phoebe, I want you to say, go boy, and give him a piece of the best food in the world.
Okay.
Where's Phoebe? Good boy. Where's Phoebe? Good boy. So there's two things that are going to happen. The classical conditioning, the Pavlovian conditioning part, is that when he looks at Phoebe, he's going to start feeling good rather than bad.
Uh-huh.
The operant conditioning part is that you're going to change his behavior in response to Phoebe. So Phoebe is a stimulus is going to result in him turning around and looking at you for the food.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can also use toys, and you might want to mix and match. I actually like this a lot. If he's real playful, he loves to play with objects, maybe even a tug toy. You say, where's Phoebe? And if he looks, you say, good boy. And then you wave a toy and throw it behind you away from Phoebe, or you play tug of war, or you give him a treat. So basically, he starts learning a different response to Phoebe. Now, in terms of the what happens when she spooks, I need to ask you a question. Are you riding her then? What is the context of this extreme aggression when she gets spooky?
It's just her fast movement. I'm not riding her.
Okay.
It is just her moving quickly in response to him being aggressive.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I would do if he was mine is I would, for a while, I would prevent it from happening. So those particular cells in his brain that all create that behavior and that response start to become less reactive.
Okay.
So I would be on a preventative management program for a while, do the positive, where's Phoebe? Go boy, where's Phoebe? Go boy, where's Phoebe? And then after a couple of months, go back to letting him have more freedom around Phoebe. If he is too reactive, I want you to run in between, as best you can, him and Phoebe, and I want you to look right at him and just back him up with your body and say, what are you doing?
Right.
And just back him up and then take him in the house.
Okay.
But hopefully that won't even happen after a couple of months of counter conditioning.
Yeah. Right.
Good luck.
Yeah,
thank
good luck.
You.
Let us
thank
know
you.
What happens, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
You know, I would love this issue between dogs and horses. I would love it if our listeners wanted to just sort of join in the conversation about issues they've had between dogs and horses mm-hmm. and how they might have resolved them. Because so often it goes so well, but when it doesn't go well, it can be a little more dramatic than we like.
than we like. And they can email us. As a matter of fact, we had an email on another issue, actually. And let me give you that, Patricia. We heard from Karen in Decorah, Iowa, who has a question about her cat, Albin. And here's what she writes. Albin has been with us for a year now. When my son brought him home from college, he could fit in the pocket of his flannel shirt. The cat is so smart. I've trained him to sit to a fault. He knows to listen for the word sit. Then he sits, gets a treat, and we say, good boy. Now he will just sit and wait for us to say the words sit, good, or boy. I feel like he's waiting for another command. Albin learned his name in 2 days. Our cat Pepper took at least 2 months or more to learn her name. What do you suggest we teach him to do next? The laundry? Dinner?
Turn on the radio.
Smart kitty.
Turn on Calling All Pets every week. Send us an email. Tell him to use the internet. No, very smart kitty. And I love that you're asking because so many cats are just under-exercised. Not just physically, but also mentally. It's true of dogs. It's true of many people sometimes, mm-hmm. I think, too. We know that mental exercise is very, very good for your kitty. So I would – the sky's the limit. You can teach your cat a gazillion kind of tricks. You can teach him the same kind of tricks you would dogs. You can teach him to fetch. Lots of cats are great fetchers. Go get my slippers. Go get, you know, go get this. Go get your shiny ball. You can teach him sit, lie down. You can teach him something like, how do you, do you love me? And then they come up and rub against you. You can teach them all kinds of agility things. I love to do that with cats because it's so good for them to use those phenomenally athletic bodies they have. So you basically can create an agility-like course in your living room. And you teach your cat to jump up onto that and then jump over to that and then go through this little tunnel and then go through some weave poles. And then and you can do this in your living room. You can't do that with your dogs unless you have, palms.
Anybody
Pomeranians
can do it.
That are 3 pounds or something. So that's just another idea. But if you get stuck, just, go to the dog literature and look up doggy tricks and then teach them to your cat because cats are just as good as dogs are at learning them.
And if somebody wants to email us, how do they do that?
We'd love to hear from you. Send us your questions and your stories to pets@wpr.org.
And you can also give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. Someone has done just that, so let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on Calling All Pets.
Hi. I just hate these callers from Florida.
Because of the weather, right?
Yeah, right. This is Marilyn from cold and cloudy Cleveland, Wisconsin.
All right. Well, Marilyn, from cold and cloudy Cleveland, Wisconsin, what can we do for you?
Well, I actually have a question for Tricia that I don't think she's ever been asked.
Oh, good. I love those.
And I'm an avid listener. Well, I want to know what you know about cat bibs. And the reason I'm asking is that I lived in cooperative housing for a while in Virginia, and all the cat owners had cat bibs on their cats to keep them from killing birds. And I never saw any mangled birds there, but I never have heard of cat bibs around here. So what do you know about cat bibs?
I know nothing
what
except...
What do they look like?
Yeah, tell us about
them.
Well,
as the name implies, they look like a bib, and they are attached by Velcro to the cat collar, and they hang down through to the chest or a little longer. They're flexible, light neoprene, and they're covered with a kind of a different colored lightweight cloth. And apparently the position of the bib keeps the cat from being able to pounce on birds.
Does it restrict their shoulder movement somehow, and that they can't move their forelegs forward?
Well, they walk around all over the place. I've seen them all over. I don't know that they can climb a tree or not. I tell you the truth, I never looked or saw them.
I'm just fascinated by how they work. I'm very interested in them, and I love that you called. And you're absolutely right. I've never heard of them. I love that you called. Here's my guess, and it's just a guess. If somebody knows, they could send us an email to pets@wpr.org. But here's what my guess is when cats prey on birds. Usually they do it either by leaping, and they do an extreme foreleg extension, or they're on the ground. In that case, they don't need to extend their legs quite as much, so they might be able to get nestlings. Ground nesting birds are particularly vulnerable to predation by domestic cats, but a lot of cats, when they're going after an adult bird, they will extend their forelegs. And I know there are ways to keep that shoulder from extending forward. So that's my they'd be able to walk.
As you said,
they'd be able to walk. And I don't know about trees, but you know, cats don't really go after birds in trees. It's really usually from the ground.
It's on the ground.
So that's my guess. But I would love to hear from people if they've had experience with cat bibs. It'd be quite neat if they, I don't know, ate lobster for dinner as well. You could take them out to your finest restaurant.
Marilyn, you've got to stay listening. We'll probably be getting some responses from others on this one.
Well, I would appreciate hearing, because if they're effective, it could save a lot of birds.
Yes, it could. It's a very thoughtful question.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that call. We're going to have to do a little research on those bibs.
I love it. What a great call.
And I tell you what, we're going to be back next week, aren't we?
We are indeed, and we'll get more great calls next week.
We sure hope so. Patricia McConnell is a PhD certified applied animal behaviorist and adjunct associate professor of zoology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And she's here every week to give you practical advice about your pet's behavior. Calling All Pets is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Our producer is Cynthia Schuster. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. And Leo Sidran composed our theme music. I'm Larry Mueller with Patricia McConnell, hoping you'll join us again next time for more Calling All Pets.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1208-P. More pet tips and advice for training new dogs or leaving pets home alone are available online at callingallpets.org. Our website also features a complete list of past guests and online archives of the program. The website, once again, is callingallpets.org.